Welcome to Pet Chat on a Wednesday afternoon. Greg Richard joined by Cheryl Shaw and Dr. David Tabritz.
He of the creaky chair.
Yes.
Good afternoon, Greg.
I'll have to get the oil and do a bit of a mix-up for you.
It might be the chair, it might be me.
Let's
getting
WD
a bit old
you.
And creaky.
We'll say it's a chair. That might be a better option. Guys, it's our last one for the year.
It is.
I'm sad.
Yeah. But we've had some great callers this year. We've had some wonderful listeners.
Well,
let's hope that we get more today.
Yes, wait for the callers today.
Yeah.
They're going to be fantastic.
And it's the last show, so they've got to get in.
Absolutely.
And Cheryl, you've got, do you have a brooch on today?
Or? I do. It's hard to see on this floral.
It's kind of blended in a
little
bit.
Yeah, yeah. It's a Christmas tree on a car, so it means that people are going to be either travelling or people are going to be coming to stay with you, and that's very stressful for pets, so... If we get time, we'll talk about that.
I'm just thinking about that big Christmas tree from National Lampoon's Vacation. That's the first thing I thought of straight away.
Yeah, that's a must-see every year, isn't
Maybe
it?
Maybe doing it. That's the end of the day movie.
Yep.
Christmas Day, end of the day, everyone's done.
Yep.
Lampoon's on. All right, but anyway, let's not be pegged on that. It's
no worries. And if we get a chance, I can pop in with some advice around Christmas foods and the problems that we might see at this time of year for our pets if they get into the wrong foods.
Righty-o. It's Pet Chat on 2NURFM 103.7, the final Pet Chat for 2024. So we've got Gary from Swansea, and his dog has lost all the fur on the tips of her ears.
G'day, Gary.
How are you going?
Good, good. Now, your little one, what breed of dog are we talking about?
She's a Kelpie, mate.
Right. And how old?
She's 8 year old. I've got two Kelpies. She's the only one that's got this problem, but...
Okay, so the hair on the tips of the ears have disappeared, and she's being bitten by flies constantly.
Yes. And it's a funny, but it's only down here. I was away last week up in the bush, and it never happened up there. I've got the black went off it, and the flies didn't annoy her up there, so...
Yeah, there's a constant kind of cycle that happens where the flies are attracted to the, serum or the blood that's on there from previous bites, and then, of course, that just encourages more damage. And the other thing that happens is the dogs will shake their head and scratch, and they're shaking their head all the time, which just really exacerbates things, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got this, I'm just about run out of it, rosemary and cedarwood oil that they use on the horses for flies, and I just wipe that on her ears, and that's okay. But like you said, she shakes her head that much, she gets rid of half of it.
Yeah. So one of the things they do with horses, though, is they can actually, for really severe reactions, they'll cover the horse's head in kind of like a fly protector hood that sometimes goes over their ears. With dogs, obviously, that's a bit of a problem. I've seen this a lot, and it is a constant problem in the summer period when we're seeing lots of flies, and, the heat obviously exacerbates things. Unfortunately, it's kind of just do whatever works and whatever keeps the flies away, and try and clean those ears up so that once they're healed, there's no attraction for flies to come back. Now, sometimes people said, and I've had this happen where they say, I sprayed them with Aerogard or I sprayed them with Mortine. Do not do that.
No.
Okay. There are actually fly repellent ointments and sprays that you can wipe on, and that's the best way to go.
Okay.
So if you want to clean up the ears and just get rid of that residue and the blood crusting on it, then you need just salt water is all you really need. Sometimes people use medicated ointment. That's not usually necessary unless you've been to the vet and they've kind of assessed that. But the important thing is how to prevent it, and that is to use a fly repellent ointment. So if you could, you can get dog products that'll do that. Cheryl, you would have seen this a bit too.
There's a great product that you can use, Gary, called Muscaban. And I don't like to spray it on the dogs, but if you put it on a little bit of a chucks and then wipe it over the ears, it will really help, keep those flies off the ears, because some flies want the blood from the animal to reproduce. So not all flies will be causing the problem, but the biting flies certainly will.
Yeah, well, that's what we've got here at present is biting flies.
Yep.
Yeah, so the other thing too, just to keep an eye out for, is sometimes the dogs get so aggravated by this, they'll actually go and run their head into the wall. And it sounds really traumatic. It is. But it can actually have the effect of bursting blood vessels in the ear itself, and it produces what's called an oral hematoma, which is a huge blood blister in the ear, and their ear will get very fat very quickly. These are incredibly painful and do require veterinary treatment, often surgery. The treatment varies quite a bit, so always good to try and prevent this by using, say, the Muscovan or something similar that you can wipe on to prevent the flies biting them.
Beautiful. I'll give that a go then.
Okay, good luck.
Okay, thanks for your
advice. Cheers, Gary.
We've got Steve now from Raymond Terrace, and he's got a 10-month-old Cavoodle who's also constantly scratching behind their ears.
G'day, Steve.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you?
Good, good. Now, what colour is your Cavoodle?
Well, she's a black and white. She looks, we call her Pandy because she looks like a panda.
She looks like a panda. Yeah. Well, you just won cutest dog of the day already.
Absolutely.
So how long have we had this problem where she's scratching behind the ears?
Probably maybe around about 2 months to 3 months.
Yeah.
We've changed location, but she was doing it before we left. So, but there's no irritation around the ears. There's no fleas. There's no ticks, nothing like that. And then during the day, like, most of the day she's fine, but just certain times she'll scratch the left ear, then she'll scratch the right ear for about 5 minutes each or so. But I can't see any rash or anything there. So,
okay. The most common problem that we see with these guys are skin related, and the thing that where they can show up first is down in the ear canal. Okay,
yeah.
So you won't see it because it's deep in the ear canal, and the reason we see it there first is it's normal skin down there, but it's got a different production of like sebum, the oil that's in the ears, right? So what happens is you get this closed in, moist, warm environment. Bacteria and yeast can start to cause problems, and you only see it when it actually surfaces by building up and up and up through the ears, and then they've got this full-blown ear infection. In the very early stages, it can actually just be deep in there and it won't show up at all. The only thing is they'll be bothered by their ears, and it can be behind their ears because obviously the ear is three-dimensional. You know, they're just scratching at what they can get to. So any time a Cavoodle or any of those breeds, small breeds, have often got hair in the ear canals that can limit ventilation, that's going to be the most likely thing. Now,
and the treatment is?
Well, it's oftentimes you need to go see the vet so that they can actually look inside and have a look, okay, and look down deep into the ear canal, because their ear canal, all dogs have an L-shaped ear canal. So when you look into the ear, you're only looking into the vertical part, but there's a horizontal part. And when we have a look at the vets, we'll actually be able to look into the horizontal part. And that's where we sometimes see these problems. So it's best to actually get that checked, because if it goes on for much longer and they get an ear infection, then you've got, you know, problems with like ruptured eardrums, chronic ear infections. So it's best to get that checked early, because there are some preventions that could reduce the risk of this escalating any further.
Now,
one other thing I just wanted to comment upon, and that is that sometimes I'm not entirely convinced that this could be happening, but there is a condition in Cavoodles that can occur. It's a form of epilepsy, and they can get facial irritation in the nerves. And so there have been some cases, and we do see it in cats as well, where they can get irritated around the face and we can't find any other cause. And then we treat them with phenobarbital, which is an anti-epileptic drug, and the problem goes away. That's much less likely. But if the ears are all clear, then that may be a problem, and you've ruled out fleas, etc., and so on. So you need to get to the vet and get them to have a look down there. But just keep in the back of the mind is, like, could this be an epilepsy-type problem? We're a bit young, but, you know, I think it's going to be an ear problem.
All right. Okay, great. Thanks for that.
No worries. See ya.
Cheers.
Gwen now from Shortland, and she's got an 18-year-old cat that's pees and poos everywhere.
Hi, Gwen.
Hi, how you going?
Oh, not bad. A bit better than you by the sound of things. So
she's getting better. I just wanted to know if can cats get dementia, because she will be 18 in January, you know, and she just goes down the back steps, does a business under the house, comes in. She's pretty cool. But just all of a sudden, we'll just wee here, mainly on the dog bed, or we'll poo on the dog bed or on the carpet. Now, I have put a potty box out, which I hate. I hate potty boxes. But she is slowly going to it.
Yes.
Still has her moments.
That's really good questions. And I'm glad you gave us that little bit extra background, because it kind of makes sense now what's going on. So before you didn't have the litter tray or potty box, as you called it. So you didn't have that inside. She was only going out.
She's always gone outside.
Yep. Yep. Okay. So you definitely need, I would say you need two of those.
Oh, yeah.
Different areas of the house, maybe different types of litter in them.
Yep.
Now, the question is, why is it happening? Could it be dementia? It could be, and we'll come back to that in a sec, but it could also be arthritis.
Yeah, she has trouble moving. You can see it in her legs now, just a little bit, when she goes to jump up on the lounge.
Yes.
You know, she won't jump up on the bed. I have stairs at the side of the bed for her, but she, just
so
a little bit.
She kind of looks at going outside, which involves some stairs, and it's a bit far and so on, and it's just...
Okay.
The dog's got a smelly place, so I'll just go there, because even though it's the dog bed, to her it's just smelly dog.
Yeah.
So she just uses that. But as you said, if you can put a litter tray down and she's using that, then that's good. Just make sure it doesn't have really high sides. Make sure the dog can't get to it to eat anything.
Oh, no, Jasper wouldn't go near it. He could care less.
Excellent. Yeah. Coming back then, so for arthritis, there is some treatments available for cats. Yep. And they can make a big difference, certainly to quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
Could it be dementia? Yes, but we don't call it dementia. So it's kind of labelled as cognitive impairment or cognitive degeneration, where they're just not making good choices and thinking and so on. And that can occur to a variety of reasons. It's not just simply old age as such. So you can actually have conditions like hypertension or high blood pressure. That can cause problems with cognitive impairment. You can have heart disease. You can have hormonal disease, can do all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's possible we could be seeing some of those other influences. Certainly the arthritis to me looks more promising in terms of treatment and, you know, how effective that could be. But there are some other treatments that are available if we think after examination that, you know, there may be some other cause. Then there are some other treatments. But by saying, if we just kind of bundle it as dementia, or even if we get to the point where we just say, oh, it's old age, I don't like that term.
Yep.
Because, you know, if she's 18, you kind of go, well, that's, geriatric. But my goodness, she could, you know, we all hear stories about cats that are living, you know, to something, something that's got a two in front of it, right?
Yeah.
So it's just about improving quality of life and saying, okay, you're a cat, old cat, arthritis, let's treat your arthritis and you can live happily. Because I'm sure she doesn't want to mess everywhere. So if we can give her the opportunity, low sides on the litter trays, get two different litters, keep the dog away, and talk to your vet about possible arthritis in an elderly cat.
Yeah.
Mm.
So that would explain the reason too, because the reason I say dementia or cognitive, whatever you want to call it, she'll come into the kitchen and she will just meow at the top of her lungs. At 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes is really good when you've got to go to work, but she just meows. Now, when you get up in the morning, she wants to be fed. You give her a packet. It can be a couple of hours later, she's standing out here at the dish, meowing as loud as she can. She wants to be fed.
Talk to your vet about, there's a hormonal condition called hypothyroidism. We see it in old cats, and it can cause that cognitive impairment. It also makes them very hungry.
She eats all day.
Yeah, yeah. So I'd be following that up, maybe get a blood test to check her kidney function and check her thyroid function.
Okay. Too easy.
Yeah, okay.
Beautiful, thank you very
much.
No
worries, good on you, Gwen. See ya.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Andrew from Bulwara. He's got a couple of foster dogs, two older collies, one has storm anxiety, and the other one has lupus. Afternoon, Andrew.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andrew. Well, you've got your hands full by the sound of things.
Oh, look, it's a very rewarding thing to foster a dog and hopefully help it along to a new home. Sometimes they come with their own little trials.
So how long have you had, did you get these two together or?
Yes, they're a bonded pair. They're both 11 years old. So probably finding somewhere for them is going to be
challenging.
Process,
And how long have you had them for?
Oh, we've only had them for about a week or so at the moment.
Right.
We have fostered dogs before. We had a Moraman before, and then before that we had a Greyhound cross, which we didn't do very well on because we adopted it rather than fostered it. So, but these two, the male has got lupus now.
Yep.
He's not showing a great deal of signs for other than his sort of nose is a bit scabby, and then he's got one ear that had been fly-blown. I heard the discussion earlier about the fly-blown ears.
Yeah.
And We've been putting filterback cream on his nose, on his ear to sort of protect it and to keep it. It doesn't look that bad. I mean, from what I've looked on YouTube and so on, that there's some pretty horrendous things out there if they're not taken care of. But he's in pretty good shape.
Is he on any oral medication?
He's got fish oil. Vitamin B3 and another drug, which I can't think off the top of my head, he's on. He came into the system about 3 years ago and they went out and then he's had to come back in. They've had to come back in.
Mm.
And his nose, I looked up the archive pictures and his nose doesn't look any different. So. I think that how he's been treated, it seems to be going along all right. We just want to make sure that we're doing the right thing, so we haven't sort of
processed
this before.
Yeah. So just quickly for people, so lupus, and there's a disease in people are very similar. We see slightly different manifestation in people. Now I'm just retrieving from my small animal medicine memory bank. I think is an autoimmune disease against anti-nuclear antibodies. I'm probably wrong about that, but it's
along those lines.
Yeah, it causes the immune system to attack certain organs, and so the skin is where we most commonly see problems, as you said, on the nose, on the bridge of the nose, or on the front, on the plenum, and sometimes on the ears, areas that have. Limited blood supply in some cases as well. So we get this reaction that occurs, and sometimes it's sensitive to cold and so it'll flare up, or it's sensitive to heat and it'll flare up, or it's sensitive to sunshine and it flares up, or, seasonal factors can play a role. So there is, as you found, skincare is a key part of management, and there are various ointments that are sometimes used. Often this falls into the realm of working with a veterinary dermatologist to provide and prescribe the correct treatments. So for most people, and I've only ever seen, I would say, a handful, like maybe you could count the number of dogs on one hand over 32 years where I've seen with lupus, and everyone has a slightly different treatment. So if you've got a scenario, you've got a combination of treatments that are working, then you probably just need to keep running that on. And 11-year-old dog, that's not surprising. If you've noticed that it's much the same, then it could be certainly the disruption of home care has not allowed it to progress. But I'm just also wondering about the history of about speaking with a dermatologist, because that'd be the other piece of the puzzle that might help things.
No, look, I think he's been well and truly loved. Unfortunately, sort of a lot of people out there, the rental crisis and housing
has
forced him to come back to the rescue format. So
understand.
Anyway, and the other one, the female, she's a similar sort of age. They've been together since they were pups, apparently. She's terrified of storms. Now, she's on medication for, I think you've got to give it to, it's a matter of what's checking the app every day on their phone for the weather and if there's any storms or activity going. You make sure she has a tablet about an hour or so beforehand.
Yeah,
Our half greyhound that we adopted, she was a similar sort of thing, very scared of the weather, storms, and but we tried lots of things over the years with her, and one of the things that did work is we got her a thunder shirt. That you put on and sort of wraps tightly around the body, and I was just wondering whether we've still got Bindi's old thunder shirt here, so we haven't had a chance to try it on the.
Probably similar. I'm just going to consider that, you know, the shape and the size of the dogs. One with a short coat, one with a long coat.
Oh, Bindi was a half greyhound. She was, I think, half Irish wolfhound. So she had, although she was longer in the legs, her body was sort of similar
shape
proportions to the collie.
Well, look, you know, collies are a bit rounder, so which is only going to make it a little bit tighter, and that's probably helpful. That's a great idea, and certainly, you know, the method that you've been looking at is checking the app, being aware. So you're using the correct approach. There's some short-term medication. Some dogs, we do use long-term medication, like they've always got this background level of drug in their system to keep them calm, particularly through, the summer period where we're getting intense thunderstorms. It's been a bit rough the last 2 weeks, I guess, for you guys.
Yes, it has. Well, it has been sort of the first night we got her. We had a big storm during the night, and we hadn't sort of realised it was coming, sort of thing. But since then, we were told that she likes the sound of waves on beaches. So we've had had the YouTube going with sounds of waves on beaches, sort of playing overnight. So. Slept right through with that without any trouble at all. So,
That'll keep everybody in the house calm then. I mean, that's going to be great. Probably a bit difficult to move to the beach, so you're bringing the beach to her, which is a great idea. So for the thunder shirt, just for people too, is what it's doing is it's giving the animal the feeling like it's being held, and it's very comforting. The other thing a lot of people do too is like, you know, do I comfort the dog and reassure them that everything's all right, or do they need to be left alone? Generally, it's better to let them find a place to go and hide. Make sure that's available. That's okay. It shouldn't be on your lap. Okay, so they need to have a place they can go to where they've got their things, and they can feel like, okay, I'm protected in here. I've got the thunder shirt on. I've had the pill. Sometimes we also talk to owners about doing desensitization by the use of, tapes that play the sound of thunderstorms, and doing that not at this time of year, mind you, but in the middle of the year or from April on, to try and get the dog to use to that. But that probably doesn't address the whole phobia, because we suspect that there's the involvement of changes in barometric pressure and air pressure that are also affecting dogs, because we know
you're right, because they feel it. They sense it long time.
Long time. That's right. Long time. I mean, thunder does, it's a low frequency. It travels a long distance. They probably hear it before we do, because they've got super hearing, obviously. But I think the approach you're taking is fine. I would still keep doing those things. Definitely use the thunder shirt. And if it's, doesn't quite fit, then you need to get one that fits better, but it'd probably be okay. So I'd go with that approach.
Is there anything else that I see? There's I think Adaptil Care. There's collars and stuff.
The Adaptil. Yeah. Look, if they've only been with you with a short time, it would certainly be worth trying. So Adaptil is a pheromone, and oftentimes we see it helpful for dogs in a change situation, and they kind of fit that. Whether it has an effect on a storm anxiety, it's probably, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to speak with some of my colleagues. I don't think it'd hurt. And it's certainly the fact that you've brought them into the house means they're going through that change. So, yeah, look, an adaptable diffuser or if it comes as a collar, then fine, that's useful as well. And but apart from that, I think the medication that you're using, which is the shorter term, that's it'll be a benzodiazepine, kind of like helps them stay calm.
I've got it on my phone here because I had to get some new ones. I'll just pull up the picture.
I know in the past we've used temazepam and clonazepam with dogs.
Trazodone?
Yeah. So trazodone will be the drug that provides that calming background for the dogs. We use it a lot for dogs that are in hospital or dogs that are coming to the vet. It can be quite good for that situation. So same thing for dogs with storm anxieties. It's just going to make them feel like, okay, the world's not collapsing around me. But again, the Adaptil, the Thundershirt, providing a cave environment for them to hide, all of those things are going to help. And over time, hopefully, she starts to feel a little bit better in the presence. The phobia won't go away completely, though. It's just how she copes with it. So I think you're on the right track.
No worries. Look, thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure
we're
doing all we could.
Yeah, good story and well done. Good on you, Andrew.
Okay, no worries. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
It's Pet Chats on 2NURFM 103.7. About to wrap up another year of Pet Chats.
Oh.
We're into Christmas not too far away, which is great for life if we're going to have food.
Oh, yes.
Because we've got the pig that we can do whatever we want,
well, essentially. No, Greg, shouldn't. You do have to eat healthily. I know. Scrooge over here.
Boring.
But more importantly, I'm reminded that a couple of years ago, probably 10 years ago, I had a client come in on Christmas morning and their dog had gotten in. They gave each other chocolate for Christmas, this family, and the dog had actually started eating the presents overnight. So instead of coming out and Santa's left some crumbs from the biscuit and carrots for his reindeer, they had a dog lying there with chocolate all over the place. And rushed him in, and we had to treat him for chocolate poisoning. I think if people got chocolate poisoning, we'd be more circumspect. But dogs do. Dogs are sensitive to it. So dark chocolate especially, milk chocolate though, this time of the year, there's loads of it around. And especially so if you've got to be careful about the rum and raisin chocolate. It's got raisins in it, obviously. Yep. The rum they're fine with, but the raisins are toxic as well. Okay.
Right.
So if you've got a dark chocolate rum and raisin, that is a lethal
dose for a dog. And the macadamia nut chocolates. They're really bad too.
So chocolate causes seizures and neurological symptoms. Funnily enough, macadamia causes paralysis.
I wish I didn't laugh when you said chocolate with a dog with a chocolate all over it in the morning, because that looks funny.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you can pick the breed. It was a Labrador.
My friends years ago woke up to, they had to be their family Christmas breakfast, and they always have croissants at the beginning of the day, and their dog decided to get up early and rate all their croissants.
Oh.
Like every single croissant.
Okay.
And then left a lovely message under their Christmas tree afterwards.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah. Because we do see dogs eat bread products rest of the year, and that can cause problems, because it blocks up the stomach. Right. So grapes, raisins, macadamias. Thank you, Cheryl. I didn't write that down.
Oh,
chocolates are especially the problem we see. And also Boxing Day ham, we call it, in the emergency vet world.
Oh.
Dog eats the leftover ham that's been sitting out on the table or, uncared for. And by that stage, it's developed a slightly bacterial symbiosis. So they come in with food poisoning.
All right. So no ham.
No ham, and they get gastritis, acute gastritis from all the fat in the meat.
Okay. Well, I didn't think that would be a thing, but
I could sit here for hours and tell you about things that dogs eat at this time of year that are problems.
Yeah. The other thing too is when you're doing your baking, the string from the roast and the skewers, things like that, make sure that you put them away. You know, don't just stick them in the garbage, because a lot of these dogs won't be being supervised like normal because the houses are busy, there's people. We just need to make sure that they don't grab hold of those because they can do a lot of damage.
Yeah, and as we say, rest of the year as well, dogs, no cooked bones, no cut bones. So if there's leftover bones after the meal, they don't go to the dogs. They get wrapped up, as Cheryl said, securely, so that the dogs can't then harm themselves and eat something and end up requiring surgery.
Well, guys, that's our cue to go.
Oh, okay,
lovely.
We're out.
Thank you
Merry
very much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry
See
Christmas.
You next year.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.